It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Cofield and Company here on a Monday. I feel like I got bashed a lot in the last hour. See if we can clean things up here. We got a winner on our Steel Panther tickets. I hope we have a lot of those the rest of the week. I'll take a pair of those. Let's go call up the prize department. I'll go to that. It's a good show. I told you to give us feedback at 702-364-1100 on our text line. That's our dual text line and call-in number. But on our text line, you want to remember the code word of the day. For the next 8 weeks, every day, Monday to Friday, we'll be giving out the code word, keyword. We're doing 8 trips in 8 weeks. We have a trip to Venice that ESPN Las Vegas is giving away. Venice, Italy. Yes. 5 days, or you can take the cash out, which is $3,000. Just send in the keyword today. Not very creative, but it's easy to remember. Venice, which is where the first trip is too. So text that in. 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. JVT, Griffin, Cofield, 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Let's get to it. Big Four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
So I really wanted a recap of what Omaha was like, buddy. You went out there for the College World Series. It was a VSIN trip. I saw you set up at a pizza place, bar, Rocco's. It's kind of well known for its Jello shot contest with all the schools. So I want a report card. How was it?
It was fun. It was cool. I like experiencing places I've never been to before. I think a lot of people do. Having never set foot for an extended amount of time in mid-America, it was a cool place to be. As somebody who grew up out here, no shot at the program, but not really a college environment for the most part, outside of maybe some good basketball games. So being in a college environment where there's some very passionate fans around, chants and screaming, alcohol flowing, it was a very unique experience that I will not have again unless we go back last year, of course, or next year.
Jello shots.
They taste good. I don't really that's not my desire as my main vessel of alcohol consumption.
Nah.
It's too much. I don't like sugar and alcohol too much. I like the occasional drink. I'm a big margarita guy on the rocks. So that's the length of my sugar intake that I'll take. Obviously, you get pretty bad hangovers. At least I do when I drink a lot of sugar with the alcohol. So that's never really great either. Being a big guy, this might come as a surprise, but when you're running around and doing a lot of things and then people are shoving drinks in your face, you're not eating a lot when you're doing these trips. So you pair that with high sugar alcohol consumption.
It's a mess.
Yes, it's an absolute mess that makes me feel terrible at the end of the day. But I had a good time. I will always be grateful for a job like this that offers me the opportunities to travel and do things many cannot unless it's on their own dime.
Well said. For entertainment purposes only, you guys were tracking the VSIN Jello shot intake.
Yeah.
Did you guys have a winner?
I lost track of it. It was lost track of. I don't think many people were keeping track. I did keep track of my own individual Jello shot intake over the course of those days. 18 is how many I took in.
Griffin's giving a nod of approval. Really? Only 18?
18, you said in a single day?
No, over the course of the trip. We were there for the course of the trip. For those who don't know,
now who's the old guy?
It was three nights, 3 days. So left Wednesday, and then Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, came back Saturday morning. So I will readily admit I did not actively try to get in on the Jello shot challenge for the most part. Although I do have a great moment, which is now my Twitter banner of myself, Stormy Bonatoni, my co-host, and Derek Stevens, owner CEO of Circa, all taking Jello shots together on the air. So that was fun.
I saw some of those images.
Yes.
Good for you.
It was cool. They tasted very good. There was 4 flavors. They tasted very good. They were sweet.
And they are for charity as well.
Yes. You get a portion of the sales go to charity. So that was good. So
did
I didn't
you
mind
pay for any?
Yes, I did.
You did?
The ones that I was given free ones, yes. But the ones that I actively sought out, I did pay for.
Okay.
I want to be a good member of society. And honestly, it's selfish if I didn't drink.
You got to be part of the team.
Yeah.
And it's for charity.
Of course.
Travel road tip, since I travel a little more than you, convenience store nearby the hotel is very important. You got to be able to pick up some snacks here and there, not get kind of, if you bent over at the with the freaking hotel, little convenience store, everything.
If you forget a toiletry or sort of sorts.
If you forget something, yes, you need that.
Not within 2 miles of where we were staying.
I do most of my walking on the road just trying to get to convenience stores.
Yeah.
But I usually have it mapped out pretty good.
I mean, I don't mind.
I know where they are beforehand. I'm ready to go.
I don't mind walking.
2 miles?
Yeah, so say. Like, I don't mind like a mile walk. It's not too bad.
Yeah, a mile walk. And then the danger zone is like when it's a mile and 1.2, 1.3. And then you're like, do I take a ride share to that?
Yeah.
But it's like a little further and I want to walk.
Correct.
What do I do?
It was 2 miles each way. You know, it's not like a 2 mile stretch. Because again, if it's a mile there, a mile back, that's not too bad. Probably about a 30-minute journey altogether, you know. If you're walking at a leisurely pace, 13 minutes there, 13 minutes back, whatever time in the store. So it's not too bad. But yeah, it was 2 miles away. And, you know, I had somebody bugging me like, hey, you know, if you go out there, you know, will you buy me a pack of cigarettes? I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to go.
Yeah. Okay. I was like asking her like, hey, can you bring back some bottles of water? I don't know. How many pounds do you want me to freaking haul back
that
to
too.
The G-damn hotel?
So I ended up not making the trip, but that was one of the big downfalls of that area. It was cool to be downtown. There was a lot of cool sports bars at different places around in the area that I liked to explore and get to. The cool part was I was a 5-minute walk from the stadium. So anytime I needed to go back to the hotel, come back. It was an easy, simple walk, all that kind of stuff.
We're spoiled here.
But this,
you grew up in Vegas, so you lived here a long time.
Store every
like
corner.
Every freaking, sometimes there's four.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's three.
I felt like, so I made this point, but somebody told me. So I was like, you know, I think I might quit my job in media and open a convenience store somewhere in downtown Omaha because I'd make a killing. Somebody corrected me and said, it's not this in downtown Omaha throughout the rest of the year.
Right, pretty dead.
To which I responded, I did not think of that.
Hammer time for you, aside from the Jello shots? You mean any stars? Anything good?
Oh, there was a lot. There was a lot going on, especially Friday night.
I love these
night.
Travel stories.
Especially Friday night.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to like give away any real details, but I will say, again, we're very spoiled as media members. Very spoiled. And now I was paying on my own dime for these drinks. But I never felt more like a D-bag media member than Friday night when I was at the hotel bar throwing back libations. And there was all sorts of big wig ESPN media members. And I may or may not have bummed a dart off of a very forward-facing ESPN media member.
What's a dart?
It's a cigarette.
Yeah.
It's very fun.
You're not going to reveal who it was.
No, I can't. Well, because
they smoke.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I feel like that's one of those things where you don't really put that out there. By the way, I actually don't. That was my first one I've had in many years. You can tell what kind of a night it was on Friday night.
Okay.
Yes.
See, wasn't just the Jello shots. He had other stuff.
Yes.
Proud of you.
Yeah. So that was my first and last, and probably the rest of my life. But I just, you know, I wanted to feel cool, and I did. Especially when a very famous media member was like, "Here you go." I was like, "All right." And then just to stroke their ego a little bit, I leaned in and they said, you know, you do a good job.
Reaction?
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Okay, good.
Yep. And it also led to it led to him giving me a lighter.
That was a guy.
About 20 minutes later.
Right. Number three.
It was Stephen A. Smith, I admit it.
And I can't hold it in.
He was hanging out in Omaha, Nebraska for the College World Series.
Olympic hockey back with the pros, 2026, Milan. Our own Jack Eichel. BGK's Jack Eichel, one of the first six on the team for Team USA, Austin Matthews. The Tkachuk brothers, Quinn Hughes, Charlie McAvoy, and Jack Eichel. It's cool. Cool. I expect the Olympics to be the hockey competition to be one of the more popular competitions, especially here in the U.S. and in Canada.
Oh, it probably should be.
I would love to see an altering of the current rules, which are banning Team Russia from being in. Like, I would love to see Ovechkin in.
Well, it's ridiculous.
But I guess we'll have to just watch the NHL and Gary Bettman, who says Russia's okay here, but won't fight for Russia in international competition.
That's what makes it so
bizarre.
That's what makes it so weak. If you're going to ban it, go full bore.
Yeah.
Say no more Ovechkin. He's not allowed to play. Every Russian-born hockey player is not allowed in the NHL.
Cocaine koozies out.
But instead, it's just, I think it's an easy cop-out here. And again, you're not talking to somebody who's pro-Russia. It's just that's a very weak stance to take. Oh, international competition? No.
And we're going to abide by those rules internationally, but not in the NHL.
Especially with the talent level of the Russian team.
I think they'd be the favorite.
Yes, they'd be the favorite, if not one of the favorites.
Why, that Four Nations thing was like, it was great, but come on.
Of course, you're limiting one of the best. So let's put them out there. Let's let them duke it out. I'm ready for it. Let's go.
Number two.
Stanley Cup has turned out to be a competitive series.
Oh, I'm getting ready.
My big pitch going in was, hey, the ratings could be a freaking bonanza here. They have not.
Nope.
One of the big stars not only is not drawing eyes, but what is Connor McDavid doing in the series?
Absolute complete no-show. I never want to hear his name mentioned with Wayne Gretzky again unless the words in between are Connor McDavid is nowhere near Wayne Gretzky. Wayne would win. I want to start that hashtag. Hashtag Wayne would win. Last three games, where's my boy at? In his time on the ice, they're minus three. He's got 1 point. Come on. What are we doing? I thought he was supposed to be the best of the best. I thought he was Connor McJesus. And yet when his team has needed the most in the last three games, complete and utter no-show. They are lucky hockey is not covered like basketball. Can you imagine if LeBron had zero impact?
Okay. Are we being insular here on the coverage? Are we only thinking of the U.S.? What do you think it's like in Canada?
They're treating them with kid gloves. Stop. They're just happy to be here. This whole narrative, like, oh, Canada, we need a Stanley Cup. Connor's doing everything he can to boot it. Like, no, they're being nice.
Oh, boot it.
They're not destroying him. If this was mainstream media coverage, like every other sport, his legacy would be questioned every single day. How do you not show up in the big? You're being outperformed by Leon Draisaitl. My guy's got four overtime goals in this postseason. And you're no-showing while your team's getting smacked around by the Florida Panthers. By the way, let's not even mention that Florida should have won this series already. Up 3-1 in Game 1, you blow it. Up 3-0 in Game 4, you blow it. They've been kicking you up and down the ice. You're supposed to be the best player in the world. I build up as such. And yet here you are completely no-showing in the last three games. Greatness steps up. Connor McDavid taking a step back. Superstar? I don't think so.
You're very angry. Very angry. This has got very intense.
Wayne would win.
Number one.
I'm going to start a new media company. And we're going to cover hockey just like it's going to be First Take, but just hockey.
Just hockey?
Yep. Just destroy these guys.
Everything's about Wayne Gretzky.
I think McDavid's soft. I think none of them pale in comparison to the great one.
Number one.
It looks like Joey Chestnut. Great American hero. A real athlete who delivers in the clutch is back with the famous hot dog eating contest at ESPN. So, 1 year break. I do have to say, his tweets, it kind of made it look like he had to apologize, which I don't think he has to apologize for anything he did last year. He signed with another food supplier. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure that he was pitching. I know he was pitching vegan dogs. They got all mad. They banned him from the contest. He wound up making him look silly because he went on Netflix against Kobayashi, who's been gone for like 15 years. And those guys did 83 and 66 and blew away the winner in the 4th of July contest. Chestnut is back. I would like to see Kobayashi back as well. Come on, guys. Have the two best in the world go at it, even though, you know, Kobayashi's getting older.
Well, Kobayashi retired, did he not?
But he claimed that he had stomach issues. He's all done. For the money, he came back to Netflix and did it.
I don't want it. I don't want
Why?
Because
it drives Chestnut to a new level.
But
he did 83.
It's not fair.
He's a Kobe.
It's not fair to these guys. It's reminiscent of finally getting Pacquiao and Mayweather. They were past their primes. Mayweather waited them out, and then Pacquiao had nothing.
That's the fight we need.
We were all waiting for it, and then eventually it flamed out.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas. And ESPN Reno.
This hour in Reno, Northern Nevada, brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyer, 766-1400. It's a call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number. Got a dial 775 in the north. So, kind of a monster deal in Major League Baseball. But are we so regional with baseball now that most people don't really pay attention a whole lot to a Boston-San Fran deal where Rafael Devers, who's at, 275, 15 homers, 58 ribs, is not old, is in his prime, is pretty much every year a 35-and-100 guy who can play third base decently. I can't wait until he plays first for San Francisco. That'll tell a lot. He's moved by the Red Sox, and the Red Sox smear campaign has begun.
Hell yeah. I mean, it should.
Every story out there is they got tired of Rafael Devers. Is that the same way they got tired of Xander Bogaerts and Mookie Betts, or is this just another move by the zillionaire ownership group of the Red Sox where they're like, we don't need to pay guys big money. Let's get them out of here.
We can
continue with this this image of this rebuild for years. People show up anyway. What's the big deal?
That, to me, is the crazy part. It's just, again, you go back to even Cincinnati where the owner was mocking Reds fans and saying, where else are you going to go, right? It's the same power to the people, folks. If you don't like it, stop showing up.
Don't go.
It's very simple. And yet you watch this weekend when they sweep the Yankees, the place is full. Everybody's there, body to body, shoulder to shoulder. I'm amazed. And hopefully something like this comes of it. Because here's the other part about it. It's, think about this. They had Chris Sale, Mookie Betts, and Rafael Devers. They have come away with maybe one player that is worth having in a long-term sense. They've got nothing for these guys. Even if you could, if you were to justify the moves that they have made, maybe you could at least point to, hey, man, we've gotten all these guys, and they're all coming up, and they're all great, and we've got a young core. Like, they're just playing young guys. We don't know what they're going to be. And that, to me, is what's absolutely insane here, is you ship them off for a guy that was getting some starts for San Francisco, but you immediately optioned a prospect and another minor leaguer. Like, what are we doing? And what drives you, I think, insane, you made moves this offseason that showed the fan base and others that you believed yourself to be a playoff contender. You went and got Alex Bregman. And whether or not he was going to work out, which ultimately hasn't, you went and got Walker Buehler to shore up the end of your rotation. You made moves that projected, we're going to fight for a postseason spot. And then when you're in the midst of playing your best baseball of the year, because you've kind of stunk all year long, then you ship off Rafael Devers because now it's a problem. I think it just smacks of, we think this guy's going to be like a 240 hitter that's going to give 200 home runs at the tail end of this contract, and we don't want to be a part of that. And that's a crappy way to run your organization.
Well, the way they put it was they couldn't deal with him anymore, and he wasn't living up to his responsibilities, which they did have a public beef over him switching off of third base for Bregman and playing first, and instead he's played DH all year, which he's actually excelled at. That, to me, seems like something like lost in translation. I can't believe that an organization and a manager couldn't convince a guy to play another position. I would guess that he felt like he should have been informed, which, whatever, if you're anti-player or you're pro-boss, you might not believe that a player of Devers' level deserves to know that, hey, we might switch you off the position. Are you cool with this? Mm-hmm. There's a way to do it.
Of course there is.
And not everyone has to be like, oh, you know, the great players just switch regardless. And it's not, do you switch at work when your responsibilities change? You just go along with it, or you piss and moan a little bit?
Hey, buddy, by the way, you're in accounting now. We signed somebody to fill your current position in, like, manual labor. You're in accounting now. Make sure you do a good job.
I will bring up VSiN. You guys switch your lineup. You've had, I don't know, 10 different shows. Does every host go along with it and acts in copacetic fashion every time they do that? Or are some of them like, what the hell's going on?
Of course not.
Yes.
Right.
And the same thing could happen in baseball where your star player, who you've deemed the organization by giving him whatever it was, $280 million, there was some weird miscommunication. And then you're right. I love the timing of it too. Like, they're actually playing some decent baseball and they're like, yeah, get him out.
By the way, to keep that going, just really quickly, not to bring too many people behind the scenes, I would very much argue it has been a detriment to me that every time I've been switched by position, I've been like, you got it, right? The same thing.
Being
like,
too cooperative, not being a squeaky
wheel. Yes. At some point, you have to stick up for yourself. And the Red Sox put this on, this whole thing. They started this when you went and got a guy at the same position where your best player was already playing.
By the way, and I saw someone, now I remember his exact age, it's 28, because I remember someone writing the position change, kind of that move in your career where they're like, hey, you can't play that position anymore, which we should bring up and always remind people, Derek Jeter was terrible at shortstop late in his career, but he was allowed to play shortstop in spite of the fact that A-Rod was a better shortstop. And Jeter, that was never held against Jeter, even though he was kind of a baby about it. He was like, I'm going to stay there even though I can't play the position defensively. He didn't say that part.
What about Kobe at the end of his career? Kobe was a low efficiency chucker at the end of his career, but they let him do it because of what he had done prior.
Yep.
And you could very much argue the Lakers would have been in a better position had they handled that differently.
I think the Giants, I mean, we can track the four guys who got traded. You mentioned Kyle Harrison without mentioning him. I think the Giants benefit from this immensely. The Giants have had this weird thing happen the last 4 years where they're always in the running for free agents. They never get any of them.
No.
And I don't, you know, maybe it goes back to we were joking earlier about your San Francisco trip. Maybe people think it's a hellhole there. I don't think that's the case. It's just been time after time after time. Other situations have been more attractive. Like the Dodgers have beaten them out head-to-head on a bunch of dudes. In some ways, they were saved from different shortstops who were big market guys, big money guys.
Happy the Correa didn't work out.
Oh, my God. I was looking at his numbers over the weekend. I guess he's just never going to be what we thought he was going to be, which he should be in that, you know, pantheon of great 20-25 shortstops, putting up 25-90 and hitting .310 and playing pretty good defense. He's just not good with the Twins. Very, very average.
Yep.
So, anyway, so the Giants have had trouble getting those big-name free agents in, especially with the Dodgers spending, you know, so much money and developing their Japanese pipeline. If I were a Giants fan, I think that's the thing I would be most pissed off about.
Oh, the inability to crack that?
The Giants can't break that freaking pipeline now that it's set with Ohtani. And then all these guys are like, yeah, we'll take the deferred money. And the Giants are getting almost none of them. They have a Korean star in Lee. But
no, you're right.
They just haven't. It hasn't worked. They've tried. And in this case, guess what? You don't have to try. Trade prospects, and you take advantage of an organization that wants to smear Rafael Devers. That, you know what? That whole message will be received for about 2 weeks, and when the Giants are starting to move up the standings and Devers is on his way to another 35-100 season, which is probably better than that this year, the Red Sox fans are going to be like, where are all our star players who we developed? What happened to all of them? I don't know. You tell me. Stop going to the games. By the way, real quick, I'm going on and on. Prime example of organization that they have no expectations because their fans don't care about baseball. And the Red Sox fans probably need to stop going to games. Instead, they treat that like it's Wrigley and it's, hey, it's a historic site, open bar, the district's great, so they keep going. The Rockies and Mets in the Rockies' last home series got 35, 38, and 40,000. Why would the Monforts do anything different?
Sure.
You keep showing up.
Trust me, I'm with you. It all drives me nuts when you're talking about the ability of some of these franchises and these fan bases to actually make change if you just stop going. I think my favorite team is a good example of that, too. Angels are routinely inside of the top 10 in terms of ticket sales every single year. They've stunk. They crapped away having the two best players in baseball on the same roster, and yet everybody shows up every single time. It's incredible.
It's a great place to go to a baseball game. The stadium's not necessarily great, but the weather there's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So people are like, hey, whatever. Whatever goes on the field, we get to see other teams that are good, we'll go.
I also think, to your point, though, I think this makes the Giants legit. Well, for those who haven't really been watching a ton of baseball, you know, and this is getting into the months where you start to pick up a little bit more, their pitching is crazy great. Their bullpen is number one in the league in terms of bullpen ERA. Their starting rotation, when you look at some of the guys they throw out there, Logan Webb just went out there the other night against the Dodgers, shut him down, performed very well. Robbie Ray is in the midst of this now Cy Young resurgence all of a sudden, which is absolutely nuts. They have this kid Hayden Birdsong, which actually looks like he's got some pretty good stuff over five starts so far this year. Landon Roop is not a dude who's like going to blow you away. His underlying stuff is actually great. They are a team that was just desperate for some sort of offensive presence. Devers is going to hit great in that park. His average probably going to tank a little bit because he can't just like whack doubles off the green wall anymore. Green Monster. But he's going to fit perfectly out there. This is exactly what they needed. Why can't they go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers in the NL West? And by the way, the only thing they really gave up was, like you mentioned, Harrington and their number four prospect. And their number four prospect. It's pretty good.
And if anyone wanted to just rest on their laurels and just rely on the ballpark, right, to make money, that park is awesome. The setting is awesome.
I'll be there in 2 weeks. Can't wait. Or in a week.
You're going to be shocked, like, where it is.
I've been there.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Okay. I was blown away by, like, we just went over to that neighborhood. I'm like, wait, it's just, like, right off the trolley line? Like, it's just built, like, really built into the city.
It's brilliant. It's a cool place to be. The area's awesome. The little built-in bar where you can just sit in there and then immediately just go in and watch the game. I absolutely love it. And we're watching the Marlins. So the ticket prices were cheap because the Marlins stink. First base line, front row.
Do you think this Red Sox smear campaign will work?
No.
Are the fans there and sports talk smart enough to not just look at the guy and go, you know what, you're right. He's a fat crumb who didn't want to do right by the organization.
No.
Okay.
It's already working.
Because this, I'll just tell you, you can go back in Red Sox history, like go all the way back to the 70s, and I think the media was a lot more cooperative back in the good old days when it was great. It wasn't. Not all the time. But they've had smear campaigns against guys. When they were done with them, they made sure to kind of crap on them going out of town. And there wasn't as much media now and as much fan content creator stuff to kind of call people on it. But you can go back to like Carlton Fisk, mm-hmm. like that far back. And they smeared him. They definitely smeared Mo Vaughn, who was, you know, freaking, they loved Mo Vaughn. And then all of a sudden he was garbage.
It's a small sample size of the fan base. Go on Reddit. Go on any of the threads about this post about Rafael Devers. Red Sox fans immediately, locker room cancer, better for the team, get him out of here, didn't want to participate, didn't want to play, they'll be better without him. No, you won't.
Enjoy 75 wins.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
John, did you look up the numbers for division? What other Giants division odds for the NL West?
Oh, they're 13-1. Off the top of my head, I know that they're 13-1 to win the 8-1 to win the American League. Or excuse me, National League.
Yeah.
Let me double check what the division numbers are. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right.
I think look, they're only within two, they're within two games of the Dodgers.
It's probably a good time to bet the Aces if you still believe they can win the title. But this has not been a great start to the season. Asia Wilson was out this weekend.
7-1, by the way.
Okay. Aces lose again, 76-70. Satu Sabally with 22 points and 9 rebounds. Jewel Lloyd, who was traded for Kelsey Plum. So far, it's been Kelsey Plum winner of that trade.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot with this Aces team that confuses me. I don't understand year after year why they don't have a bench and don't have depth. We've talked about, and I guess here's the thing, maybe they can't really promise the players this, but in back-to-back years, their whole team got spiffed $100,000 a player. I guess I don't want to make it obvious that it is a salary cap circumvention, but how do you have $100,000 for every player on the roster via LVCVA and then not have a bench? And they look to have grown old, like, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They're not playing great defense. Asia Wilson was actually kind of down. And before, WNBA fans were like, what? She's averaging 21 and 9.5. And, yeah, those aren't her standards. Last year, she set new standards with 27 points and 11.5 rebounds. Yeah, this is the way basketball players are treated. Well, across the board, her performance has not been great. She's hurt right now. Like I said, Jewel Lloyd has not been up to snuff at all. I don't even know if this is an upper half of the league team anymore. And you remember our own Adam Hill, the years they won the championship, was like, this is boring, it's not fair. Well, it got real fair real quick, didn't it? The whole league caught up with them.
I think they're a top half of the league team only by default. It does seem that outside of the projected top three or four, that there's not much depth.
I misspoke a second ago when I said the whole league caught up with them.
Yeah.
I need to restate that. The bottom of the league is horrendous.
Yes.
So that either means they loaded up some of the top teams, or, like, you know, the Fever really did a good job of getting more good players around Caitlin Clark. But, yeah, the bottom of the league is horrendous. I have to look at their schedule. They've played some of the bad teams, too.
Yeah, at this
point, playing an expansion team and you're losing 93-58 to Golden State.
The league does not seem to have many legs in terms of the depth on it, because it seems that we're very much destined for a Lynx Liberty rematch. Then there's the line of demarcation after that, where you get teams like the Fever, and I think the Aces you throw in that realm as well. Maybe you can make a case for some of these others, but there seems to be another line after that, and then you get into some of the minutia of, like, okay, where are you putting a team like Seattle, or where are you putting a team like Phoenix? But there's not many great teams. Not very good teams, I should say. So, to your point, I think when Asia Wilson comes back and is fully healthy, they're going to have a potential to get back into the postseason mix. They're going to be fine there. But
when does the organization start getting some criticism about what's happened the last year plus?
I'm with you.
You went from a dominant, almost unbeatable champion, intimidating the crap out of the league, to a team that kind of looks the same except for the Jewel Lloyd swap for Kelsey Plum, and still a bench that is not very good. And that clearly Becky Hammon doesn't trust the bench to throw him out there for many minutes.
That seems to be also one of my big criticisms of Hammon. She's one of those coaches that is she the Tom Thibodeau of the WNBA? Where it's like, nah, I got my five, and those are the ones I'm going to run into the ground. Because that's the other big issue, like looming over this, what you're talking about. You can't just say, oh, when Asia's healthy. Asia Wilson played a lot of basketball. And this is eventually what's going to start to happen. She's regularly participating in 35-ish to 40 game. Nope. You can't rely on that.
And she looks tired.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of her numbers, like I said, points per game are down about 6. Mm-hmm. Rebounds are down 2.5. Her shooting percentage is from 51.5% last year to 44%. So she's not shooting as well.
You're actually doing nice. It's actually 43.
43%, yeah.
And you can find the bottom real quick in the WNBA.
Yes.
You're like, yes. Really quick.
Man, maybe I have to make a bet. Later in the week with Willie, I'm very bullish on what I saw from the Sky. Really bullish. The guy who called that game yesterday, Sky victory, triple-double for Angel Reese. Jordan Kent is on the way.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, we're getting ready for Game 5 of the NBA Finals. 5:30 tip. I watched a lot of WNBA over the weekend. And I enjoyed the Sky game. And the guy who was on the game is Jordan Kent, who can talk about a lot of things, but he's doing play-by-play for CBS and is a former star athlete, three-sport star athlete at Oregon, and gives Steve Cofield, John Von Tobel a couple of minutes here. Jordan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I enjoyed that game yesterday with the Sky winning and Angel Reese putting up a triple-double, and I thought she looked a little bit different, maybe some coaching adjustments to get her feeling a little more comfortable.
You know, she really did look a lot different. The last game we did prior to that for them was their game against Indiana in Chicago, where Cordy Vandersloot goes out with the ACL injury midway through the first quarter. And you don't have time to adjust a game plan that quickly. And you don't have a chance, obviously, to put some practices underneath your belt. And what really stood out to me with Angel was how aggressive she was at getting a rebound and pushing the pace. And she's got very good vision. And I was impressed with the decision-making because she attracts a lot of attention when she gets into the paint, when she has the ball, just because she's such a threat for offensive rebounding. Teams are always sending a secondary defender to try and box her out. So even when she has the ball, she draws two, and she just did a really nice job of draw two, kick to the open player. And Chicago, they shot the three very, very well. So there were a couple of opportunities where, whether it was in transition, she would swing it over to the weak side for a three, or if it's in the half court, ball moves around a little bit, she gets it in the post, kicks it weak side for a three. But to me, I saw a dimension of her that I thought, okay, if they can let her do that a little bit more, because they don't really have a true point guard right now except for Haley Van Lith, who shined in that game as well too. This is very intriguing. Someone made like a Draymond Green reference, and I can kind of see that, where you've got a very defensive-minded player that's got really good vision that can also be a threat in the low post and can be a multidimensional player. So I thought it was very refreshing to see, and something that in person was very impressive, because coming into that game, her career high for assists was 4 in a game. And then she goes and has a triple-double. I just thought was really sensational, really happy for just her and her development as a player and what she is and what she means to the league.
So obviously anytime we talk about Angel Reese, the discourse around her is going to be part of the conversation, and the unfair discourse at that when it comes to her. I'm curious first off about her game. For somebody who doesn't watch as much WNBA as Steve here or as you who covers the league, it is hard for my eye to go away from the shooting percentages of Angel Reese and how ineffective it looks. What is the story behind the low shooting percentages? Why isn't that better? Is there a flaw in her game?
I think a lot of times when you look at the shooting percentage, it's, you know, you're not hitting as many shots as you'd like to in the paint. End of story. But she's chasing after her own rebound, and a lot of times being aggressive and just trying to get shots up down low. So she might not make the first one or the second one, but she's getting the rebound and maybe closing the possession out with a made shot. So for me as a coach, I don't mind if you go 1-for-3 on the same possession. You still scored on the possession. It's better than 0-for-1 and you don't get the offensive rebound and the other team gets it. So I think it's really easy for people to circle that number and think, wow, this is an ineffective player. It's not the case at all. When you look at everything she does on the floor, I saw what she did defensively in that game because Connecticut jumped out on him 8-0, and it was Reese's intensity on defense. It was block shots. It was getting tough rebounds. It was live ball steals that fueled her team. And we live in a world of basketball. We're looking at offensive numbers. That's right. How we gauge a player a lot of times, right? Oh, someone's averaging double figures. They're shooting over 50%. They've got to be an effective player. Well, there's more than one way to impact the game. And if you're going to highlight one particular stat and judge a player off of that, that doesn't paint the complete picture to me, to her impact on the floor. And is it an area where she can improve? Yeah, she'll be the first one to tell you she'd like to see that number go up. But she's still going to be a tenacious rebounder. She still leads the league in rebounding and especially offensive rebounding. And when she pairs that with her defense and pairs it with the way she shares the ball, to me, she becomes a very effective player night in, night out. And it's just a matter of how are the pieces around her doing to complement that.
Jordan Kent is with Cofield & Company, calling games for CBS WNBA games, called the Sky Game of Victory, Angel Reese triple-double. A little sociological take here. Why do you think, or what does drive the dislike of her on social media? Because it's intense and it never ends.
I think when you look at the difference, I think there's such a comparison between her and Caitlin Clark, right? It just comes down to what happened at the end of the national championship game and then the path that their careers went on after that, where the following year, Caitlin wins. And I think a lot of times people want to compare Caitlin's game to her game, and they have two completely different games, to be honest. Caitlin is a great passer. She's a sharp shooter. She can stretch the floor. She's a playmaker with the ball in her hands, typically. And that isn't what Angel excels at, but she's growing in that department with the triple-double. And she is a rebounder. She's a better defender. And I look at the things that she can do. And so I think a lot of times people want to pit one person against the other. And they want to create this rivalry, create this narrative. And that was one thing that I was excited to call these games. I said, it's not about that. These are two players that can affect the game in different ways. Now, obviously, Caitlin and Indiana, they're off to a better start this year, and they look to be the team that's a little bit more complete than Chicago in the early going based upon their two head-to-head results. But to me, if I'm a coach, I'm happy with either player on my team, and they're going to be effective in either ways. And so I find it disappointing, honestly, to see that kind of discourse, because it just makes no sense to me if we're looking at these people as players. And even with Angel off the floor, a good colleague of mine that is a play-by-play guy an analyst for CBS, you know, his daughter attended one of their media days and got a chance to shadow Angel, and Angel took her all around. And to me, I think it's just completely unfair, the discourse that she gets. And I'm very impressed with the way she carries herself with that discourse, because I don't think a lot of people could handle the criticism that comes her way and still go in, night out, and bring that effort and produce a triple-double like she did after a lot of the stuff that sometimes is said. So I'm very impressed with just her resolve and her confidence in herself, despite what we've sometimes seen people try to say, to be honest. So for me, I completely disagree with the discourse around it. And I was really, really impressed with her performance. I thought it was great for her to do that and to show that dimension of her game, because I think it just shows you that you can be a talented basketball player and do it in more than one way. And she's showing us that right now.
How about the return of Caitlin Clark and the it factor and the kind of the star power, where the Fever were just okay without her? I think they were 2-3 when she was out. With the back, she lights up New York, who basically has crushed everyone for 7-3s. Some of them are like, you know, 30 feet. She's, you know, we talk a lot of odds here in Vegas. I kind of laughed that she could be the MVP before the season. I think with this little break they had where they weren't winning, Clark comes back, beats up on the best team in the league, and just goes nuts. I think she's got a shot if she can play at a high level to win the MVP.
Well, she's going to be one of those handful of players, absolutely. And the way that she shoots the ball and the way that she shares the ball, of course. Nafisa Collier has something to say about this right now with her start to the season. She's been dominant in what Minnesota's been doing as a team. And, you know, this is a New York team that was dealing with a couple of injuries, and that's not to take anything away from Indiana's performance. I think Indiana learned, and we learned this talking to Lexi Hull, she said, when Caitlin's out, we had to learn how to play the offense a little bit differently because she set up so many great looks for us. We had to learn how to generate more of our own looks with Caitlin off the floor. And now that they've got a better idea of how to move freely in the offense without Caitlin necessarily setting them up all the time, that creates a more dynamic situation for Indiana. And yeah, of course, when she bombs three straight threes from 26, 27 feet out, that's going to be a huge highlight, right? And people are going to be drawn to that. And that's that special ability that she brings to the league. And, you know, she was fourth in the MVP voting, I think, last year, and she's got a great chance to be up there again this year, especially with her team playing. But what I've quickly learned calling this league the last 2 years is that there is some tremendous talent here. And when you look at the rosters that are stacked with some of the top teams, it'll be a competitive MVP race. And, you know, she'll have one odd to kind of go against. No MVP in league history has missed more than three games in one season, and she's missed five at this point. And does that play a role into this year? Who knows? But she certainly will always have her hand in the MVP race, and I'd be shocked if she doesn't win one someday. Is it this year? It's too early to tell. And I think Nafisa Collier is off to a pretty torrid pace right now.
Jordan Kent's with us. A tremendous athlete back in your day to make you sound old. I didn't realize your track exploits. My God, we were just talking during the break. We have all these speedsters that we have as guests on the show, like all these guys who run 10.55. 100 meters and higher or better. It's nuts. You have a summer camp. What's a summer camp around? I mean, is it your skill set where you're good at everything?
Well, we do offer multiple sports for the kids. You know, we have nationwide camps that we've been growing over the last 14 years, and Henderson's been a great area for us. We had a camp earlier this summer, and we've got another one coming up starting on the 23rd at the Slam Academy. It's all ran indoors because we all know it gets pretty hot there in the summer, but kids come in, they get a chance to choose football, basketball, or soccer. They're going to get agility training every day. They're going to get life skills. We tell mom and dad, hey, listen, you send us your kid. This is for the beginner to intermediate athlete that wants to fall more in love with their sport. And we're going to teach them how to try to be the best version of themselves they can be and avoid the whole comparison trap that kids fall into. And it's a great way for kids to learn more about the sport they love or find a new one that they never thought they would like. And really positive atmosphere. So it's great. We work with close to 4,000 kids across the country in 14 states. And it's fun for me because as I travel the country calling these games, you just get a chance to meet all these pockets in different communities and connect with families. And I'm all about just giving kids opportunities to go out there and discover kind of where they shine and do it in a way where it's okay to fail. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to kind of find your way. And I think that gets lost in today's world where so much of it is specialization so early. And if you don't pick that sport by the time you're five and you aren't spending 12 hours a day, then you're wasting your time, which I think is just a complete lie and a conversation for another day. But we just want to give the kids a chance to go out there and really discover what they love and get them in that atmosphere where they can learn to improve.
JordanKentCamps.com, best place to go?
Yes, it is.
There it is. Henderson Camp coming up June 23rd to the 26th. JordanKentCamps.com. Okay, I got like a minute left. I got a lot of questions for you, but I'll ask you, let's test your objectivity as an Oregon guy. What are your thoughts on the new Pac-12? What do you think it'll be? And can it actually be part of the college football playoff?
You know, I love the leadership of the conference. Teresa is just doing a really nice job of putting things together. I think you're still going to need one or two more pieces. And then it just depends on how everybody performs, right? I think right now we're so used to the narrative of, hey, this school is a Power Four school. We're used to saying that name in the same sentence. And it's going to take some time for some of the Mountain West schools that have now merged with the Pac-12 to sort of be in that same breath, right? But if they can continue to produce and go to the tournament like they have in basketball, I think football is where they kind of need to flex a little bit more muscle. If a conference can start having some better records and getting some bigger wins like we used to see from Boise State back in the day and Fresno State back in the day, then you've got a chance. But I like the direction they're going where you're kind of looking for a lot of those kind of fringe schools or that are border Power Four, put this all together, do it in a wise way, and you might have a seat at the table someday. And we certainly know it's going to be one of the top three or four basketball conferences, in my opinion, but you're putting together. And now it's the football piece, and we know that football is kind of driving all this change. So my hope is that you can start to get those same type of athletes and coaches on the football side that you've been getting on the basketball side.
Jordan, appreciate it very much. Let's talk again soon. Great job on the Sky game and great job with the WNBA. We appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely. You guys have a good one, all right?
There he is, Jordan Kent, jordankentcamps.com.